Big guitars up, lights down, and attitude at full blast. You're tuned to Truth Amplified with Vixie Steele, the show that plugs into the wall socket and doesn't ask permission. Can a team stacked with heartbreak, controversy, and cult-level loyalty still be the soul of a city's basketball culture? We're talking New York Knicks. I'm Vixie Steele, British-American loudmouth with a mic and no filter, and today I'm fired up about a franchise as unpredictable as a Midtown cabbie doing 60 down 7th Avenue.
All right, let's get into it. The New York Knickerbockers, yes, that's the full name, were founded in 1946, a founding pillar of the BAA that became the NBA. Their first ever league game was in November 1946, when they beat the Toronto Huskies 68-66 up in Maple Leaf Gardens. Day one, history stamped. Their house is Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena, buzzing in Midtown, sharing dates with the Rangers, printing money off concerts, boxing, the circus, you name it. The Knicks are one of the originals, still in their original city alongside Boston, and the Garden is as much a product as the team, mate. Early on, they were proper contenders. Three straight NBA finals in the early 50s under Joe Lapchick. They signed Nat Sweetwater Clifton, the first African-American player to sign with a pro team, and even rolled out Wataru Mesaka back in 1947, the first non-Caucasian in the BAA. New York didn't just play ball, they helped integrate it. Respect where it's due. Then came the Red Holtzman era, in the late 60s into the early 70s. That's the gold standard. Team first, ball movement, help defense. Not vibes, principles. They bring in Dave DeBuscher. They've got Walt Frazier, cool as winter. Willis Reed in the middle. Dick Barnett, Bill Bradley, and later Earl the Pearl Monroe. They went 60-22 in 1969-70. Rode an 18-game win streak and had the moment. Game 7 versus the Lakers in 1970. Reed limped out, scored the first two buckets. The Garden lost its mind, and the Knicks won the title. Reed became the first to sweep All-Star MVP, League MVP, and Finals MVP. That is mythology carved in granite. They grabbed a second ring in 1973, then the long, cold winters started stacking. Bernard King caught fire in the 80s before cruel injuries, and then the 90s were their own brand of pain. Pat Riley, then Jeff Van Gundy, turned the dial to defence and pain, with Patrick Ewing anchoring everything. Brutal Eastern Conference wars with the Bulls, the Pacers, the Heat. Chicago blocked them more times than I block idiots on Twitter. There's the infamous 1997 Knicks Heat brawl. Bench leaves, suspensions flip a 3-1 lead. Then the lockout year in 1999, when the 8th seed Knicks made the finals. Allen Houston's runner sank Miami. Larry Johnson's 4-point play detonated the Pacers. And the Spurs ended it in 5. I swear, being a Knicks fan is character development you didn't ask for. Here's the confusing bit that proves capitalism loves a circus. The Knicks have been valued at the top of the NBA. Forbes had them at about $1.4 billion in 2014, and far higher since, all while stumbling through messy rebuilds, bad contracts, and public scandals. Anucha Brown-Sanders versus MSG and Isaiah Thomas ended in a verdict against them. There was the 2006 Nuggets fight at the Garden, and that Trent Tucker rule cameo in 2006 when David Lee tipped one in with 0.1 seconds left. And yet, Madison Square Garden keeps the cash register singing. The brand is bulletproof. The goose is golden, even when the eggs are a bit rusty. In the modern shuffle, Donnie Walsh cleaned the cap. Amare Stoudemire landed in 2010. Carmelo Anthony arrived in 2011. And Tyson Chandler bolted the defense in place. Lin Sanity lit the city like a pinball machine in 2012. Jeremy Lin turned a stuck offense into a runway. And suddenly your aunt in Taipei was buying a Knicks jersey. In 2013, they set a then record for threes, won the Atlantic, and beat Boston for their first series win since 2000. Then the wobble again, and the 2020s hit. Jalen Brunson brought adult point guard energy,
RJ Barrett grew up on the wing. Julius Randle resurrected. Karl-Anthony Towns came in and stretched the floor. And by 2026, they were back in the NBA Finals. New York, mate, it never stays quiet for long.
But if you want the one decision that still splits Barstools from Flatbush to the Bronx, it's Game 7 in 1994 against the Rockets. Did Pat Riley cost the Knicks the title by sticking with John Starks while he was bricking his way through the floorboards? My take? Yeah, he should have sat him. Starks was ice cold, 2 for 18, and the game was screaming for a change of temperature. Rolando Blackman was there, a walking mid-range jumper with playoff experience. Hubert Davis was there, a live wire shooter who didn't need the ball to hum. You didn't have to punish Starks, just buy a few minutes, steal a couple possessions, and break Houston's defensive rhythm. You know who was on the other side, Hakeem Olajuwon, a chess master in high tops, and their defense had New York in a headlock. If ever there was a night to zig while everyone expected you to die on a hill, that was it. Now, to be fair, I hear the counter-argument. The Rockets' defense was smothering, and Hakeem dominated the series. It wasn't just one choice. But sports are hinges. A substitution at the right second is a crowbar. Riley rode loyalty, identity, stubbornness. Call it what you want. I call it a missed window. And it still stings because New York had the double title energy in the building. The Rangers had just lifted the cup, and the city was begging for the two-piece. Instead, we got a block on Starks in Game 6 and a long, sad cab ride after Game 7. Listen, if you disagree, tell me exactly why I'm wrong. Drop your reasoning, not just memes. If your argument is basically a Jordan shrug gif with Hakeem, save it. Bring receipts, bring tape, or bring silence. Quick personal tangent, because the Knicks are a lifestyle choice, not a hobby. I'm at the Garden a few years ago. Regular season, nothing special. And during a timeout, the Jumbotron does the kiss cam. Then it hard cuts to a bloke on one knee. The section goes silent, like the moment before a cymbal crash. He pops the ring, she looks around, and I swear time slows like a bad ball screen. She says no. Not a whisper no, a full body no. She stands up and exits sideways. He's still there kneeling, like the world's saddest free throw routine. The Garden responded with boos, then sympathy claps, then someone started a defense chant because New Yorkers cope by making noise. And that, my friends, is the Knicks. High stakes, public drama, and no guarantee your heart rate recovers by the fourth quarter. One minute you're certain, the next minute the shot rims out, the trade flips, the coach resigns, or some kid named Jeremy Lin saves your Tuesday night. It's chaotic, it's messy, and honestly, it's why that arena feels alive. New York doesn't do tidy, we do epic, or we do catastrophe, sometimes on back-to-back possessions. Bloody hell, reliving that chaos just wore me out. Damn the Knicks and their endless soap opera. Beautiful, exasperating, absolutely addictive. Here's the bottom line. The Knicks are a mirror of New York. Loud, flawed, resilient. They built titles on unselfish play under Red Holtzman. They survived the 90s wars behind Ewing and Riley. They turned a salary cap purge into Amare and Melo. They rode Linsanity like a comet. And in the 2020s, they found a real floor general in Jalen Brunson and a matchup nightmare in Karl-Anthony Towns, clawing back to the finals. If they marry scheme and personnel again and keep the suits from tripping over their own egos, they can do more than sell out the building. They can bloody win the whole thing. And if they blow it, I swear I'll be the first one smashing the panic button and yelling, "What the actual fuck?" into this microphone. All right, that's all I got. Go do something useful.
I'm Vixie Steele. This was Truth Amplified. Tune in tomorrow. Bring your brain, leave your excuses, and keep the volume rude.